This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
Okay, well, time for a postmortem, which seems like an appropriate term, on the failed bid to bring the 2024 Olympic Games to Boston. Yesterday afternoon, of course, citing low public support, the U.S. Olympic Committee and organizers of Boston 2024 doused the Olympic flame on Boston before it was even lit.
Later in today's show, we'll hear from Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, among the city's leading Olympic boosters, until he wasn't. And we'll take your calls about Boston's Olympic meltdown, why it happened, and what it means for the city going forward. Let's begin with Chris Dempsey. He's co-chair of No Boston Olympics, which was unrelenting and in the end successful in the way it expressed skepticism and opposition to the Olympic bid. And Chris, welcome back to the show. And I guess I should say congratulations. This was quite a campaign you mounted, and in the end it worked.
Thank you, Anthony and Meghna. Appreciate being back on. I like that intro music. Is that available as a ringtone?
Someone's going to do it now, I'm sure.
Chris, things seemed to unravel so suddenly yesterday. Was that surprising to you?
Well, this is a process that we didn't control at all. So we always had to be reactive from day one when we started in a living room in Boston in November 2013. It was very sudden. We weren't planning for it. Literally yesterday, we had a printer arrive. We had been spending so much at FedEx. We said, all right, time to buy a printer. I had installed the print cartridges. And then about 15 minutes later, the news broke on Twitter. So this was not something that we had any really prior knowledge of at all.
Right. So, I mean, the things that happened yesterday, Mayor Walsh, of course, announced that he wouldn't sign a guarantee that the city would cover Olympic expenses, including possible cost overruns. Governor Baker declined to talk about it till he could see the audit and then the decision by the USOC in Boston 2024 to pull Boston's Olympic bid. You were opposed to this from the start. And we talked a lot yesterday about what went wrong, from anemic public support to lack of transparency to perhaps an underestimation of the kind of opposition that you represented. What was the top reason this bid failed?
Well, I think the taxpayer guarantee is a really important issue here. It's something that I think everyone knew was going to have to be addressed at some point. And it's unfortunate that it wasn't the first topic that was addressed. You know, in hindsight, we should have been talking about that from day one, focused on that question, and then getting to questions like what's the date of the opening ceremonies and where's the velodrome going to be. We let the debate become about, you know, a lot of the fun parts of the Olympics in terms of the ceremonies and the athletes, which are fun things, and we'd admit that. But unfortunately, the IOC has such strict requirements for cities, and it really has a high hurdle. And in this case, we just, you know, I think the public saw that the benefits didn't meet the costs.
But was there a way, any way, that this bid could have been successful in your view? Or in your view, is just Olympics are a bad deal no matter what?
Olympics are a great idea, but when you look at it in practice, in terms of what the IOC asks, they just are not, the process is not set up to lead to a good outcome for host cities.
I'd like you to respond to those who say this was an opportunity missed, you know, and I'll quote Shirley Leung, who wrote in the Boston Globe today that Boston could have hosted the games on Boston's terms. We could have made the game sustainable. We could have posed little risk to taxpayers. We could have showed the rest of the world how it could be done. Instead, it's the same old Boston, a difficult place to get anything done. What's your response?
Well, I just think that Shirley is being a little bit naive with that, because it really is an auction process. The IOC is going to extract the best possible bid that they can get for their terms. And those terms are, unfortunately, inconsistent with being frugal, inconsistent with being responsible to taxpayers. They're not the one writing the check. They're the one cashing the check.
What about potential upside in terms of jobs? Our own Fred Tice spoke with union electrician Chris Fisher yesterday. Here's what he said.
You know, it's taken away our work from Boston. Like, even though Boston is booming, it would have gave us more opportunity, you know, to keep the jobs flowing, you know, keep the middle class working, everything like that.
So what about that? Is that does he have it wrong there?
You know, we would agree that Boston is booming. And the reason that we're booming is that Boston has always invested in its people. We have a great healthcare system. We have a great education system, the envy of the world. Those are the things that are going to continue to be the drivers of our economy. And the Olympics were a distraction from those priorities, and they could have been a diversion of resources away from those priorities. As long as we double down on what Boston has always been about, which is its people, we really think that We're going to have continued growth in this city. We're going to continue to have a city that's booming.
Chris, I'd love to ask you just a little bit about No Boston Olympics and sort of the way you guys operated. As you know, yesterday, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh characterized the opposition for the most part as about 10 people on Twitter and a couple of people out there who are constantly beating the drumbeat. My guess is you would take issue with that. But is it fair to say that you guys did manage to punch above your weight? I mean, you were very effective.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Anthony. I mean, we were outspent 1,000 to 1 in this debate. We spent less than $10,000 in a year and a half. So fortunately, this was an issue where the people of Boston didn't look at just who has the bigger megaphone. They looked at who has the better message and who has the facts on their side. And we think the facts were always on our side. We were fortunate to have a media that was really engaged in this process and asked a lot of good questions and welcomed us to the debate. So we were able to get our message out that way, despite only spending $10,000.
All right. Well, Chris Dempsey is co-chair of the volunteer group No Boston Olympics. And Chris, stand by. We're going to come back to you, but we want to bring in another voice into this conversation.
Well, yeah. And actually, before I do, Chris, there's one question I've got for you. You ran a really good campaign. Is there another campaign in your future?
There are no other campaigns in my future. I am a Brookline town meeting member, so I have to get reelected for that. But that's about 150 votes you need.
Rough and tumble town meeting.
That's right.
Okay, well, no campaign in your future for now. Not that I'm a betting person. Okay, the other person I'd like to introduce into the conversation is Connor Unitz. He actually co-founded No Boston Olympics with Chris Dempsey, but later dropped out of the group in order to support the city's Olympic bids. Connor Unitz, welcome to Radio Boston. It's great to have
you. Thanks, Brenda. Thanks, Anthony.
So first of all, just before I have you respond to some stuff that Chris said, just remind us, how did you go from a No Boston Olympics co-founder to a person who wanted the games to come here?
Sure. So I worked with Chris and Liam and Kelly all through 2014 to raise awareness of the bid, to raise a lot of the issues that Chris has continued to raise, which I think are very important, and I agree with him on many of them. What changed for me was last fall, three things. One, when 2024 put out their original plans, which have since many of which have since been scrapped, but they were creative and they were different and they were a new way of looking at the games and recognizing a lot of the past mistakes that other games had made that we had been trying to highlight. So that was one. It was creative and original. Second, when the mayor got fully behind it, I have worked with the mayor for a long time and going back to his statehouse days, I put my trust in him that he would never mortgage the city's future, which is exactly what he said yesterday. And the third thing was that the bid had been submitted. I, worked with these guys right up until the bid was in. Once it was in, I hoped that I could help to make it better as a supporter rather than an opponent.
Mm. Do you regret your decision now?
No, not at all. I mean, I think these guys, I'm very proud of what they accomplished. All credit to them. They did an incredible job and I'm especially proud of the way they did it by an economic argument, a business argument, not just attacking it, not the stereotypical Boston can't do this type arguments that some others have made. We always agreed that Boston could do this. It was whether or not we should do it. I came to think more that we should because it would be a little bit of a catalyst to get things going.
Okay. Well, let me ask you about that because Chris was saying a little earlier that while it might have been a catalyst, it would be taxpayers left holding the bag, not the IOC. In Chris's words, they cash the check. They don't write
right.
It. I mean, is there any other way for a similar catalyst, to be used in Boston for much needed development that was part of what Boston 2024 supporters were talking about was one of the strengths of the bid?
Well, I think that's the critical thing that we all need to do now. We need to take kind of the shell of 2024 and use that as the catalyst. Just because the Olympic bid is over doesn't mean the year 2024 goes away. Let's still use that as a deadline to get some of these things done. Let's find a solution to the T. Let's find a solution to our highways. Let's build housing on some of these neighborhoods, the potential neighborhoods like where the former Bayside Expo Center is. Let's address some of these same issues that all of us agree on and use that same year as the catalyst to get it done.
So where would you focus your efforts, though?
I think the most critical need we have, too, number one, the MBTA and funding it. We need revenue. The management alone is not going to do it. We need to have some mechanism to fund it. And as Chris rightly pointed out, that was not addressed in this bid. It needs to be addressed, and we all need to put our heads together and do it. And then housing. We have these potential developable areas of the city where we can build housing. I think now is the right opportunity to go after Wedette Circle, to go after the Bayside Expo Center, to work with those communities to develop housing for the whole city.
Well, Chris Dempsey is still sitting right here. So I'm just, Chris, let me just ask for your response here. I mean, I have to say, for me, I'm not quite sure how I felt through this whole process, but one of the compelling arguments that Richard Davey himself, CEO of Boston 2024, laid before us on the program a while ago was that for politicians in Massachusetts, there's no better way to get them to actually act for the good of a city or the state than putting a deadline. And that was, you know, one of the things that Boston 2024 would have done. So how else do you think we might motivate people towards, you know, all the list of things that Connor was just talking about?
The problem with that argument is that the deadline that they were proposing was a deadline to build a stadium and a velodrome and an aquatic center, not a deadline to fix the tee. The IOC is not taking the tee when they go to events. Athletes are not taking the tee when they go to events. So there's actually no reason that you have to fix the tee for that deadline. And that's consistent with the plan they put out. Not a single dollar from their $4.6 billion Olympic budget went to fixing the tee. So this was not an organization with the mission of fixing the tee and then also doing the Olympics. This was an organization with the mission of doing the Olympics and maybe potentially getting some tangential MBTA benefits that they never really proved would be there.
Okay, so what would you tell members of Beacon Hill right now, members of the Walsh administration? I mean, I'm just looking at what Connor wrote in the Globe of that, you know, there's still much needed development at the site where the Bayside Expo Center is, or Woodette Circle, which has been the focus of so much attention. What would you tell them now to say, let's get it done?
Well, we don't object to the idea that you would invest in a place like Woodette Circle or Columbia Point. It's, you know, it's great that we're having a conversation about those things. We didn't need an Olympic bid to do that. We didn't need to spend $15 million, which is what Boston 2024 spent, to have that conversation. And I think on the tee, you're seeing Beacon Hill leaders address the tee. I mean, that's been Governor Baker's number one focus for his first 4 or 5 months in office. He's continued to sort of lead on that. So, you know, the winter that we went through, I think, laid bare that this is a system that can't get people to work. I was one of the people that couldn't get to work in February because the tee wasn't working. So I think we're having that conversation, and moving beyond the Olympics allows us to have it more richly and more deeply.
But Connor, let me ask you about the nature of the conversation that the city's been having over the past many months. I mean, Governor Charlie Baker said yesterday that he was happy to live in a place that this kind of debate could actually happen. But I noticed that in your piece for the Globe, you said that you called it acrimony, that the acrimony that developed in the city has been heartbreaking.
And it has been. It's been on social media in particular. It's been nasty, but there's also been confrontations at some of the meetings that I've attended, and it's been on both sides. It's been a lot of yelling. I just think it's sad, and I just hope we can move past that now because we all need to work together to solve these problems. Mm.
Am I looking at two people who are emblematic of future Boston leadership? Not in terms like, are you actually running for office, but the nature of the kinds of conversations that the city is having and will have about its future.
Go ahead, Chris.
I mean, look, I know that Connor and I both grew up in Massachusetts. We spent our entire lives here, have deep roots in eastern Massachusetts and the state in general. I know I'm not going anywhere. I have a sense that Connor isn't either. We want to continue to be a part of the civic debate. You know, not that we have a mandate or an obligation even, but we do feel like we are, you know, active citizens that want to continue to play a role as things move forward. And you're not going to see us shrink away from other conversations and activities.
Yeah, I mean, I would just echo that. I think when we all first got together, we're all roughly the same age. We envisioned this effort as trying to build the best Commonwealth we can for our kids.
Well, Connor Units is Senior Vice President for Communications at the Liberty Square Group. He co-founded No Boston Olympics and then later supported Boston's bid. Connor, great to see you. Thank you so much. And Chris Dempsey, co-chair of No Boston Olympics. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
And we're going to be returning to this story. And listeners, we're going to be asking for your involvement. You can give us a call. What do you think doomed Boston's Olympic bid? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. What did the city learn? What's the sort of positive takeaway from this whole experience? Give us a call. But we want to return. We want to we want to take a couple of minutes to bring you the latest on Deflategate, the New England Patriots and quarterback Tom Brady. Today, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell upheld Tom Brady's 4-game suspension for his alleged involvement in a scheme to underinflate footballs in last year's AFC Championship game. And joining us now is Doug Trabue, reporter for NPR's Only Game. Doug, thanks for coming in.
Sure thing, Anthony.
So give us the highlight of this statement today from the NFL and Roger Goodell.
Well, the big news, as you said, is that it upholds the 4-game suspension. Brady had appealed that that suspension, which was handed down in May. They heard the appeal in June. But the big detail that the league seems to be emphasizing is Tom Brady having his cell phone destroyed. That's new information that Brady had a cell phone, ordered someone to destroy it after he met with Ted Wells, the league's investigator. And that was the cell phone that he had been using for the previous 4 months leading up to his meeting with Wells. So that would have encompassed the time through January with the playoff game where the balls were underinflated. And that being destroyed did a couple of things. It made it impossible for them to get to 10,000 text messages he had sent during that time. He knew that the league was interested in those. And so that's what the league has emphasized in announcing the upheld suspension.
All right. So what does this mean for Tom Brady in terms of what options are available to him? He's facing a four-game suspension. He's not going to be able to take that any higher in the NFL. Does he go to court now?
Well, that's been the widely held speculation, is that anything short of a complete elimination of the suspension would send him to federal court. There's a lot of precedent for that. Other players have succeeded. Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice have gone to court and ended up with, you know, what's viewed as a successful run in terms of undermining the NFL's authority there. So he could take it to federal court if he got an injunction that allowed that process to play out. Then he might be on the field for the first game in September. If he chooses to stand by this and take it as is, then he misses the first four games of the regular season.
And what would his case be in court? Is it basically the idea that Roger Goodell sort of played the role of judge, jury, executioner, and as it turned out, the guy who oversaw the appeal as well, right?
Well, when we, yes, exactly. And when we spoke to Alan Milstein, who's a prominent sports litigator here on Radio Boston a couple of weeks ago,
right,
he said he and his colleagues were really surprised that Goodell heard the case himself, because one of the triggers for federal appeals is whether or not the arbiter is a fair and unbiased party. And in that case, he was surprised to see Goodell get involved in the appeals process.
All right. Doug Tribou, reporter for NPR's Only a Game, talking about the NFL upholding the four-game suspension of New England quarterback Tom Brady. Doug, thanks so much.
Thanks, Anthony.
Well, there's more of the show in just a minute. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.